Chapter 12. Reckonings of Drakes and Gorgons. Medjuson had stripped out of his armor and stood naked in an ablution cell, letting the steam scour his skin. Scars ran the length of his body, their reflection in the glass like some grim and frenzied topography. They mapped his deeds and conquests, and Medjuson knew every ugly one of them. He emerged after several hours, his skin red and aglow, a fine veneer of water vapour dappling both flesh and metal. He donned robes and padded barefoot across the cold floor. His armour stood before him, black and as badly scarred as its wearer, mounted on a simple armature. Medjuson left the ablutions chamber, passing through a heat field that instantly dried his skin, and then an archway into his quarters. The strategium table remained as he had left it, the data slates and maps still upon it, somehow mocking. He cursed his own pride for believing the gift he had found on Hamart. The other freighters would think it foolish too. An audience with them and a renewed debate as to the next course of action would not be far off. After they had licked their wounds, what precious few they had sustained, they would issue a summons. That was fine. Medjuson had his own questions for them. For now, the fleet had scattered again, running in the shadows like nothing had changed. Except it had. They had fought the Sons of Horus and won. Hard fought, just as Org had said, but they had still won. Not a raid or a hit-and-run ambush, an attack, a battle.
"He was trying to kill you again," said a familiar voice.
Medjuson had forgotten he had left the door to his quarters open.
"You realize that, of course," said Org. "And he failed, again."
"I do," said Medjuson, and began gathering up the war plans on his strategium table.
"I don't think he cares how it happens either, only that there's a body, and it's yours. This is dangerous, Shadrach, and not just for you."
Medjuson paused his mindless chore.
"You refer to the Legion?"
"Not a Legion. Not yet, but the nascent possibility of one. Pride will see it undone."
Medjuson turned to face him.
"You mean my pride, specifically? You recall we won, Org?"
Org shook his head rueful.
"Tybalt Mar is a thorn in all of our sides, but he has marked you for especial attention. I worry that your growing obsession with him and his with you could undo what we are striving so hard to achieve. To weld back together a legion, for us to bring purpose and meaning back to the Iron Tenth."
"What is it you think I have been doing all of these months, Org?" said Medjuson, exasperated. "Every raid, every sabotage, it is to draw him out. He hunts us. Can you not see that?
Mar is only bent on my destruction because he knows it will signal the end of all this. Without me, there is no legion. We have won a great victory, but it isn't over." Org frowned, taken aback by the war leader's words.
"Is that what you truly believe? You told me you did not want this, that you would serve only because others would not. This is precisely what worries me."
"It has not changed. I am resolved as I ever was to discard the mantle of war leader when stability returns to the Legion, and a better candidate can be found. Or do you think Ortek Moore a worthy replacement?"
"Of course not," replied Org, scowling at the very idea. "But Ma is under your skin, brother."
"And the flesh is weak, I suppose."
"You turn our credo against us very easily, Shadrach."
Medjuson exhaled his frustration and vented what remained of his anger.
"I'm sorry, Jebez. I do not mean to. You say I have changed. I have. I see a future for us, for the Iron Tenth, that does not end in isolation and secession from the Imperium. I believe I can bring that future about. I believe only I can do it, but not alone. I need allies in this."
"You have them. But don't squander their fealty in a vainglorious quest to kill Tybalt Mar.
It will come to a reckoning, Org, him or us."
Org nodded sadly.
"Perhaps it will,"
he said, before changing subject.
"Gorgonson has readied casualty reports for the Ironheart. The rest of the vessels in the fleet are trickling in more numbers. Arkul Theld is dead."
"I see," said Medjuson, grim.
He had liked the old captain. Moreover, Theld had been one of his staunchest supporters. It weakened his position, and would make what came next even harder, even off the back of a victory. Does the Unyielding Glory have a replacement officer?
A veteran sergeant, Clan Ungavar.
And so we continue to erode. Who is the Iron Father on that ship?
Gaelnd Kren, an adherent of the late Arn Culver.
Perfect, said Medjuson with acidic sarcasm, weighing up what the consequences of that would be. A low-ranking officer would almost certainly defer to his Iron Father on matters of clan politics, and Kren would be of a similar mind to Rort, Kernag, and the others. I need to meet with them, said Medjuson, decided.
The freighters?
Them first, then everyone. Org nodded.
Very well. I'll take the appropriate steps.
Thank you, Org. You are my hand elect.
I am whatever you need me to be, war leader, said Org,
and left. The door ground shut in his wake, it, like so much else in this alliance, feeling the strain. Medjuson began to don his armor, first dragging the body glove over his weary flesh. Over the last few months he had become quite adept at the process, having had to learn to do it himself. Armoring serfs were in short supply. Everything was in short supply. Gorgonson had occasionally assisted, but the apothecary had more important duties to attend to, and would only remind Medjuson of their recent losses. He could at least stave that off for a short while. Sitting down on a stool to attach his boots and greaves, he raised Makosa on the vox. He needed to gather the council again and plan the next engagement. The data from Hamart had proven costly, but it had not been false. Perhaps there was yet a way to utilize it.
War leader, Neuros has returned,
Makosa began, before he could speak, uncharacteristically animated. And? Asked Medjuson, realizing there must be more.
He is not alone, war leader.
You are being unusually unforthcoming, Captain.
I apologize, war leader, but you must see this yourself. He awaits in aft docking bay Sigma 8.
The docking bay?
Yes, we all do.
Medjuson looked down at the scattered pieces of warplate and the half-armor left on the armature, looking like an unfinished statue. Gorgonson's assistance would have been greatly appreciated in that moment. I am adept, but not miraculous, he muttered.
War leader?
Asked Makosa, evidently having overheard.
I'm on my way.
Sighing, Medjuson took his cuirass, affixed it as quickly as he could, and left the rest behind. A crowd had gathered in the docking bay, large enough that, as the blast doors opened, Medjuson met the armoured back and shoulders of a fellow Iron Hands legionary. What is the meaning of this? The cavernous chamber, usually only the haunt of the Spartan maintenance crews at large on the Ironheart, had become thronged with legionaries, deckhands, and what few armsmen the ship still retained. Only the servitors continued about their duties, although even they were hampered by the masses. The Iron Hand standing sentry turned.
War leader,
he said, deferential but with the same tremor of excitement in his voice that had affected Makosa.
It is beyond all hope.
Medjuson tried to look past the huddled bodies, mildly jostling with each other to catch a glimpse of something close to the intake ramps. He noticed a pair of gunships, both Drake Green and battle-scarred, and assumed they belonged to Neuros.
Where is Neuros?
He asked. The sentry pointed towards the heart of the crowd.
With him? They all are.
Medjuson scowled and began to push through the bodies. They yielded easily enough. Most were mortal, after all. But Medjuson could only see as far as a ring of black-armored Iron Hands who surrounded something, or someone. At last, Lumac put his head up, and Medjuson caught his eye. The Clan Averni captain bulled a path and urged Medjuson on with great sweeping gestures of his arms.
Stand aside,
he bellowed, and the mortals scattered, though only reluctantly.
Stand aside for the war leader!
Medjuson met him halfway, surprised when Lumac clasped his forearm in a firm lock.
Brother,
ventured Medjuson. Out of his full armor, he looked slighter than the burly Averni.
What is happening here? Why are so many gathered?
Follow me,
Lumac said, releasing his grip and forging a way through. As they reached the outer ring of Iron Hands, the guards parted, and Medjuson saw what everyone was striving to get a glimpse of.
"They come to witness a miracle," said Lubak.
And though those words sounded ludicrous coming out of the veteran's mouth, Medjuson believed them. Neuros was here. So too were his brothers. Each of them knelt, heads bowed, the solemn oaths of their volcanic homeworld murmuring on their lips. Only three of the drakes had stayed on their feet. Medjuson didn't recognize them. As he entered the circle, the reek of ash and cinder struck him like a fist. It was heady, but he couldn't decide if it was that or the one to whom the drakes paid homage which caused his hearts to quicken. Eyes red as burning calderas regarded him, a face like sculpted onyx and carrying the wisdom of ages gave a knowing smile. He rose, this titan, he of the fiery gaze and the statuesque features, a blacksmith's son, so the legend said, an immortal, so the rumours had it. Never had Medjuson felt so inadequate, reminded painfully of his half-armour and hurried appearance.
"Primarch," he uttered,
barely forming the word. It hurt his neck to crane it so much. At least he could meet the figure's gaze, even if he could not hold it. How could he hope to, with those infernos boring into him, judging, measuring, as only one such as he ever could?
"War leader,"
came the reply, a voice almost chasmal in its depth, practically resonant. Medjuson blinked for the first time in several minutes. He could scarcely believe his own words, even as they left his mouth.
"Vulcan, you're alive."
Medjuson had not yet dressed, not fully. He sat in half-armour, more dishevelled than imperious. Still, it was that or ask the Primarch to wait. Vulcan sat opposite, his post-human stature eclipsing that of the partially plated warleader. He looked around.
"What is this place?"
he asked, his voice deeper and even more resonant in the echoing chamber.
"A former triumph hall, now given over to a strategium. I thought it appropriate."
Statues stood at arms along both walls of the musty chamber, describing champions of the Legion and ancient Medusa. Banners hung from the ceiling, a little threadbare, dust motes cascading from old fabric as they bowed to the pressure of the air recyclers. Medjuson had reverently moved a few of the statues, the lighter ones, to make room for star charts, route maps, and ship schemata. Half-empty ammunition crates sat in well-rated stacks in the corners, belt feeds, bullets, and bolt shells. Promethium tanks nestled alongside. Some of the larger reinforced crates had served as stools, judging by their scuffed appearance and overall positioning relative to the strategium table. Vulcan's eyes lingered on the statues, the grimness of each stony countenance, half hidden in shadow, apparently beguiling.
"I knew them,"
he said, his tone slightly melancholic.
"Some of them. It was early in the Crusade. A different age, it feels like now."
Medjuson held his tongue, unsure what he could possibly say that wouldn't sound facile or trite. Overhead, a yellow lumen strip flickered, and Vulcan looked up.
"Unreinforced, battered, bleeding. And despite all that, you persist,"
he said, returning his gaze to the war leader.
"Impressive. I knew my brother had tenacious sons, but I had not appreciated just how tenacious."
"We have all suffered and yet still endure," replied Medjuson.
"Does that mean you will join us then?" Medjuson had explained in some detail both his military goals and his desires for the reconstitution of the Iron Tenth. Not only did the former Triumph Hall provide solace from the crew and the other legionaries on board, it had also allowed Medjuson to better describe his war plans. He had left out Tybalt Mar, but did mention the victories he had achieved against the Sons of Horus, and how this had rattled the Legion to such an extent that resources were being divided to counter the perceived threat to the War Master's crusade. He had then expressed how having a Primarch at the head of his armies would mean the Iron Tenth and the survivors of both the 18th and 19th Legions would finally have what they had lacked for so long, true and unimpeachable leadership. With Vulcan by his side, even the Iron Fathers would not resist him. they could reclaim what they had lost and return to the war with honor and pride.
I cannot, said Falcon,
hollowing out Medjuson's hopes with those two simple words. Medjuson found he currently lacked the ability to utter even one.
Do not misunderstand me, Shadrach. Your deeds are worthy. Your plan is worthy.
Then, Medjuson interrupted, finding his voice at last, what stops you?
We have a different purpose, my Draxward and I, said Vulcan. One that cannot be swallowed by endless war.
Medjuson looked over at the Drakescale-clad warriors, who had yet to leave the Primarch's side. They remained close even now, not so that they intruded or were even particularly noticeable, but near enough to act if the need arose. Medjuson did not blame them. All three of the legions sundered at Istvan had grown wary of betrayal and guarded against it even in the most ostensibly secure circumstances. Medjuson had eschewed a retinue. The Iron Heart was his ship, after all, garrisoned by his warriors. He had no cause for concern here. Besides, to bring either Org or Lumac and Mikosa, or even Neuros and Dalkoth, would have made his meeting more like a debate of terms between two rival kings than a discourse between allies. He had no doubts Neuros wished desperately to be present, and perhaps the others too. But he needed to gauge Vulcan's intent first. Alas, it seemed contrary to the one Medjuson hoped he would adopt.
I laud your victory, but I cannot join a crusade. What I go to do is of the utmost importance, so know that I do not refuse you lightly or without good reason.
Vulcan absently touched the amulet around his neck, and Medjuson wondered at the significance of the gesture.
Is it as vital as attacking the Legion of Horus? The bastard traitor who saw his kith and kin lain dead in a grave on Istvan, he said, letting his frustration get the better of him.
Vulcan grew stern, and the embers of his eyes flared, made fiery in the half-light.
Be careful, Shadrach. That is my brother you speak ill of.
Medjuson became instantly contrite.
I apologize, Lord Primarch. I am tired. The war for us has been most taxing.
And I have been slain repeatedly and driven half mad by one of my sadistic brothers.
Suddenly my pains feel rather inadequate, Medjuson conceded, shrugging. Vulcan laughed, a thunderous sound that filled the hall like the beating of heavy drums. The echo had not yet abated as he smiled warmly at the war leader, every inch the Nocturnian tribal king.
I like you, Shadrach. You are a fine warrior and a strong leader. You do my slain brother great honor, Vulcan said, growing solemn.
Up close, Medjuson could see the symbolic walls of fire and the sigils of serpentine beasts branded into his skin.
Then join me, Vulcan, and let us avenge the Gorgon together.
No, it is not will that I lack. I ache to wreak vengeance against the one who killed my brother, my sons, your brothers. It is an endless litany of retribution. But an even greater task binds me, one that would see my sons and I reach the throne world.
Terror? How? Asked Medjuson, trying to hide his disbelief.
Old paths not readily known to men.
Then let my warriors and I escort you. It would be an honor.
The honor would be mine, Shadrach, but I cannot accede to that either.
You refuse to aid me, and yet also refuse my aid, said Medjuson, and raised one eyebrow in mock offense. It is difficult not to feel insulted.
Terror cannot be reached by any army save one, and you know of whose army I speak. If I am to reach the throne world, then it will be alone, barring the three you see among us in this room.
The Draxward, Vulcan nodded.
It is an old term. I find comfort in tradition.
And you have a way to reach terror, you and your retinue. Again, Vulcan nodded.
The old path. Its ways are secret and Byzantine. I am not entirely certain of them myself, but I know it is the only way to reach the throne world and my father.
Medjuson briefly dipped his head at the mention of the Emperor. And so what is it I can do for you, if not get you to Terra?
Repair Vulcanis, our ship.
We have little to spare, but of course.
And then get us back to our path.
If it is in my power, yes. What drove you from it?
A path such as this is not conventionally trodden.
I won't pretend to understand what that means, answered Medjuson honestly. But I swear to help you, and do all I can. Vulcan slowly bowed his head in a gesture of gratitude and respect. Medjuson had been about to rise, deciding it was high time he donned the proper panoply, when Org's voice crackled in his ear.
I have the freighters, he said.
Including Moore?
No, Ortec Moore has gone.
Medjuson frowned. Gone where?
The Red Talon and the other vessels he commands are no longer with us, it would seem.
Then I'll speak to the ones we do still have, lest our alliance deteriorates further. Org ended the Voxlink, returning Medjuson's attention to the Primarch. I have some business I need to see to, if you would excuse me.
A war leader's task is without end, Vulcan replied. I would stay, if you would allow it. Perhaps there is insight I can offer.
Medjuson bowed his head, humbled.
I would be honored, Primarch.
The hololiths flickered sporadically as before, though Medjuson had chosen to receive his incorporeal guests in the former Triumph Hall rather than on the bridge this time. Kulig Rort and the others looked severe across the shaky projection, clad in full battle plate and helms. Rort gripped the haft of his power axe tightly.
Hail, Medjuson, he said, dour. A great victory has been won.
The four saluted as one, thumping their fists against their chests.
What happened to Moore?
Asked Medjuson, surprised by the show of fealty.
He has gone, war leader,
said Kernag. I know that much already. His ships would have been useful. You were with him. What happened? He asked again.
He fought, then left for further conquest,
replied Nadul Norsen, snide and bitter as ever.
Ortec Moore is a blight,
uttered Rask Arkborn. His malfunctioning bionic eyes shuttered and then opened as if agitated.
And his leaving is welcome.
His ships are welcome. His blood and sweat is welcome, said Medjuson,
and saw the unease the reference to the flesh provoked in the hololithic assembly. If not for him, perhaps it would be defeat, not victory, we now taste. What delayed your intervention during the battle? Could you not see the engagement had changed?
You ordered us to await second signal, war leader,
said Kernag, and the suggestion of slighted pride in his voice heated Medjuson's blood. And yet it appeared as if your reluctance to commit to battle swayed your better judgment.
Useful for what?
Asked Rort. Freighter? Asked Medjuson, not quite following.
You said Moore's ships would have been useful. For what, war leader?
For the next battle. What else is there, after all? We still have several other patrol routes to attack. Tybalt Mar can't be watching them all.
Is that wise?
Asked Rort, unable to hide his surprise, or perhaps unwilling to try. Medjuson sensed in him a desire to challenge for leadership.
It is our only course if we are to move forward. We have to grow in strength, find more allies. Hiding gains us neither.
Hence another gathering,
said Kernag, evidently referring to the summons made by Org.
The risk of annihilation increasing with each one,
said Arkborn, his arm twitching in sympathetic irritation.
Versus obsolescence, I would risk anything, Medjuson declared. I must know if you are with me on this, with the Legion.
We serve the Gorgon's will,
said Arkborn, and Medjuson frowned.
Meaning what?
We follow his orders and his alone.
Are you speaking figuratively, Rask?
He is the Legion. The Gorgon speaks for us now.
Medjuson knew that of all the freighters, Clan Felgs had suffered the most. His injuries, sustained over the Crusade and afterwards, had left him less than a man, and the parts of him that were machine were in need of vital repair.
Guleg?
Medjuson was asking Rort if his fellow freighter had lost grip of his mind as well as his body.
3 days, Org told us,
Rort replied, avoiding the unasked question. If he felt any unease at what had just transpired, his helmet hid it from the war leader. 3 days. A safe haven will be transmitted via fresh encryption, said Medjuson, choosing not to press the point. Rort nodded. They all did, and the hololiths flickered out. Medjuson turned, the triumph hall dark again in the absence of the dimly lit projections. Vulcan did not move, but his eyes blazed. He did not speak either, but Medjuson knew he had heard what Arkborn had said. The Gorgon speaks for us now. He needed to consult his council, and possibly Org too. The Hand Elect might have some insight, and their last meeting had left Medjuson slightly disquieted. The war leader took his leave, informing Vulcan one of his warriors would be along presently to take him and his sons to quarters aboard ship. Vulcan still said nothing. He nodded to show he had heard and understood. His fists clenched. A barrack room served as quarters for the Drakes. Spartan in decoration, it nonetheless had several berths, an ablutions chamber and an armory where weapons could be tended, stripped, and reassembled as needed. Gargo tinkered with the spear he had taken from the jet bike back on Nocturne. He had determined to shorten the haft and give the tip a sharper edge. Experimenting with the power feed, he sent a jolt of energy into the blade and frowned.
Weak disruptor field, he muttered. A pity there is no forge at hand. This ship has forges aplenty, I have no doubt, said Zaitos.
He stood staring at the seared impression of a gauntleted fist, rendered in white against the soot-black metal wall.
Then it is a pity one has not been made available to us.
Gargo flexed his bionic, the cruder one, and rotated the arm in the shoulder cuff. It whirred, irritated, recalcitrant.
This needs fixing too, he muttered,
finding it difficult to straighten the limb. Zaitos had not stopped staring at the symbol.
He said the Gorgon speaks for us now. Those were the Iron Hand's exact words. Perhaps he spoke figuratively, suggested Gargo.
Zaitos dismissed the idea with a sharp shake of the head.
The Iron Tenth are plain speaking. I have rarely heard them talk figuratively, Igon.
Abidemi nodded. He was sitting on one of the reinforced berths and rubbing oil onto his sword's blade and teeth. Not that it needed it. Nothing he had yet encountered could dull its edge, but he kept to his warrior's habits regardless.
I heard it too, but assumed I misunderstood his meaning. It is curious, though, brothers. It cannot be so. Ferus Manus is dead. I saw him fall, he said,
his voice fading as if with the painful memory.
Although I was far away.
Many of the legionaries at Istvan, both betrayers and betrayed, had seen it. Until that day, the Primarchs had all been immortals, unkillable. Gods, although no such beings supposedly existed, the very concept vehemently denied. The Phoenician had proven the point. Fulgrim, standing over his beloved brother, his blade raised like an executioner's axe, the Gorgon, on his knees, surrounded by a sea of his dead sons, all of whom had failed him. Bloodied, broken, his impotent rage all but spent. The death blow had cut head from neck in one decisive blow. What followed reignited a belief in the deific when it came to the matter of the Emperor's sons.
I felt it, I think, Abidemi said. The Gorgon's death.
Gargo set down the spear.
A hollowing storm, he said. And then absence, Zaitos concluded,
his eyes still on the symbol.
There is disharmony here, and it began with the Gorgon's end. Never has iron been so fragile,
Abidemi agreed, the oiled leather in his hand forgotten.
Do you know him, brother?
Asked Gargo of Zaitos.
This Medjuson.
Zaitos shook his head.
I have fought alongside the Iron Hands before, during the Great Crusade and after, but never that one. Numion did, I think, on Caldera, but it was one of many conquests.
They call him War Leader, said Abidemi.
And what of Neuros?
Asked Gargo.
I know his name from the muster rolls, but that is the extent of my knowledge.
Neuros had said little during the rescue. He had come swiftly, though, demonstrating the self-sacrifice and determination for which the Salamanders were justly proud. His reaction, and that of his warriors to Vulcan's appearance, had been close to worship.
"I sense questions in him," said Abedemi. "Were we any different on McCrag? And then afterwards back on Nocturne?" said Zaitos. "I still have a great many questions," murmured Gargo, but kept his voice low.
Zaitos glanced over to the only silent figure in the expansive barrack room, and thought he had questions too. They all did. Vulcan sat apart from the others, eyes closed in contemplative silence, one hand resting on the curious talisman he wore.
"Father,"
said Zaitos, as Vulcan opened his eyes, though whether in response to Zaitos's attention or something else was unclear.
"I thought my brother dead,"
said Vulcan, gazing into shadows, his mind far away. Vulcan remembered the cadaverous apparition that had haunted him in Conrad's dungeon, the spectre of his long-dead brother that had tried to drive him mad. That ghost of Ferus Manus had returned to him now, a spectre ever present since he had heard the words of the Iron Father spoken into Medjuson's hall. "The Gorgon speaks for us now." Each of the Primarchs had been bestowed gifts by their father, their creator. He had made them all unique. Why should it just be Vulcan given immortality? Could Ferus not also be beyond death? But he had been hacked apart, his flesh sundered and degraded, his head taken. Nothing remained. But then had Vulcan's flesh not been burned to ash, his body frozen, his innards eviscerated, his skin flayed, his bones crushed? Even the heart of Deathfire could not destroy him. He had no wish to be part of Medjuson's crusade. The Iron Tenth were on their own, but he could not leave. Not yet. He had sworn to himself not to be dissuaded from his task. It would be so easy to return to the war. The temptation had grown powerful. He could not get embroiled in Medjuson's struggle. But this could not be ignored. Ferus Manus was dead. He had died on Istvan. So why, then, did he still haunt Vulcan's thoughts? Out of the corner of his eye, Vulcan thought he saw him. Him, as cold and gaunt as he had been then, skeletal and wasted, and feared he could be losing his sanity all over again. He shut his eyes, willing the revenant away. And when he opened them again, the Gorgon was gone. He might never have been there at all. And yet, Vulcan rose to his feet.
"I must know,"